Come to order. It is Thursday, February 28th, 2008, and we have a tough agenda. We have three bills. A couple of them are going to take quite a bit of time, and we can only be in this room till a few minutes to three. In fact, Senator Moi will have my head if she hears. I said we could go past 2:45 because that's really our official stop time. Senator Prettner-Solin, would you like to start? And I think that we have a quorum. Yeah. And we do have a quorum. So,
Senator Prettner-Solin. I will start. My testifier is not here yet, but I think he's on his way. So
okay.
It shouldn't be very long. And I have Senate File 608, and actually this is Senate File 2491. And you may have remembered that my presentation of Senate File 608 in this committee last year was about an incident involving a previous constituent and his family. In August of 2003, there was a plane crash in Grand Marais, and there were three passengers on the plane, a mother and her two daughters. The pilot, Charlie Erickson, and passenger Catherine Pearson, the mother, died in the crash. The two girls, Grace, who was 4 years old at the time, and Lily, who was 3 years old, survived. And Catherine, Grace, and Lily all lived in Duluth at the time of that crash. These young girls had extensive medical injuries, and Grace and Lily spent approximately 3 and 8 weeks, respectively, in various hospitals. When the girls emerged from the hospital and the medical bills started arriving, their family was informed that the airplane insurance company was denying coverage. And then this started more than 3 years of litigation between the family and the insurance company. Finally, after more than 3 years, the parties entered into a settlement. At the end of last session, we passed a bill which created the Aviation Insurance Meet and Confer Group. And this group met four times in June, August, October, and November. And the group was comprised of members of the Pilots Association and other pilot representatives, various representatives of the insurance industry, and other interested parties. And they're all listed on page 3 of the report, and I think you have a copy of the report?
Senator Prettner-Solin, yes, we do.
Okay.
It's got the airplane.
And as you can see from the report, the group's meetings covered a wide variety of topics and potential issues, but ultimately ended up with a few recommendations. The bill language in front of us is a compromise that evolved from these meetings. Passing this bill in this form will help to ensure that pilots get what they pay for when they purchase insurance. And while passage of this bill may not eliminate the possibility of another innocent third-party victim having to suffer through the chaos and the turmoil that the Pearsons had to experience, it will certainly narrow those chances. This bill is very straightforward. It simply requires that a direct causal connection to the loss be made before an insurance company can deny an aviation accident claim. Essentially, what this means is that when there is a crash, in order for the insurance company to deny the claim, the insured pilot's action or failure to act must have had a direct causal connection to the loss. This law has been in effect in other states such as Texas, and Minnesota is not breaking new ground on this issue. And I have with me Toby Pearson, who was the father and husband to the Pearsons in the crash, and a representative from actually, he is the father.
Still am.
I was going to clarify that.
Longer the husband, but still the father.
And I think there's a representative from the Pilots Association, John Kavanaugh.
Welcome to the committee.
To speak more on the bill and the group's deliberations.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Toby Pearson. As was mentioned, I was the husband. My wife died in the crash. I still am the father of the two children. Grace and Lily are now 9 and 7, and they're complaining about doing their math homework, so they're recovering nicely. The bill before you comes from a bunch of meetings, series of meetings that took place over the summer. The genesis of it was last year when we were in front of your committee. We agreed to meet with both the pilots as well as the insurance companies to see if we couldn't find some type of resolution to this that would be a little bit more tolerable to all parties involved. As was mentioned, the bill is a compromise. The meet and confer group was chaired by Representative Mike Beard. The report was distributed for your information. I believe you each got a copy of that. The compromise is trying to balance the interests of the innocent third party, the pilots in getting the coverage that they pay for, and the insurance company's ability to defend itself against bad actors. I support the compromise as it's been drafted and would stand for any questions.
You know, Senator Prettner-Solon, I don't think you just did tell kind of what brought us to this point and why. Can you tell? I don't know if you recalled the
But there was the
issue
accident
of insurance.
In Grand Marais, and the children and the mother were in the accident. The mother and the pilot died in the accident. The two children had extensive medical injuries following that, and they were in the hospital for several weeks and had multiple surgeries. And when it came time to pay the medical bills, then the insurance company said that they would not cover it because.
Yeah, at that point, the
Mr. Pearson.
Excuse me, Madam Chair. At that point, the aviation insurance denied coverage, so they were not going to pay the claim out. The reason they denied coverage.
That's what I wanted to have said here, yeah.
Part of it was, and the tricky part is because we entered into a settlement, there are only so many things that I can talk about.
Okay.
But they had a reason for denying the coverage, and they when they denied it, we then went through 3 years of court and settlement negotiations before finally settling. I can't specifically address their reason, but they did deny coverage, and then we did pursue the 3 years of court battles before we finally were able to settle.
The whole issue, Madam Chair, is that they denied it after the fact. Instead of doing the due diligence up front to determine the insurability, they denied the claim after the fact, so there was no way for the family to know that the pilot was not insured.
Right. And members, when you say before the fact, you mean when the insurance policy was issued. They maybe should or shouldn't have done it then, and then they didn't react. They made it, they voided the coverage, I think, after the accident. So that's why we're here, and this is going to create language that would deal with this situation. And I know we're going to talk with this bill will go to judiciary and they'll talk about direct causal connection there probably. But Mr. Kavanaugh, did you want to speak to the bill?
Madam Chair and members, I'm John Kavanaugh with Cook Hills Yard Associates. We do represent the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association, otherwise known as AOPA. You may have heard from some of your members last year regarding this bill when it first came up. First of all, AOPA actually participated in the working group this summer and are also supportive of the final outcome, which is this bill, Senate File 2491. Although not all members of the Meet and Confer group necessarily agree with the final outcome, AOPA believes that this is a compromise bill and it balances the rights of the injured third party with the concerns that the pilots and insurers had about unaffordability of the premiums. I will stand for questions at this point.
Members of Senator Vandeveer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm having a little trouble still understanding this because what the Senate research says is that, for example, a pilot's failure to keep a certification current or report a health problem to the insurance company cannot be used to deny a claim unless it had a direct causal connection to the accident. And I thought insurance was for the benefit of somebody you hurt or a third party, and it's like something that the insured could do would make it not covered, and that confuses me.
Mr. Pearson, do you want to, or?
Madam Chair, Senator, from my perspective, I would agree with you that, in fact, in my particular circumstance, when the plane crashed, the insurance company should have paid the innocent third party. And that is what, in fact, last year's proposal would have done. And then it would have been between the pilots and the insurance company to argue about whether or not the pilot actually had coverage or didn't have coverage, or whether or to recoup against the pilot. And I'll let John speak to the concerns of the pilots, but my understanding of it during our meet and confer group was the concern there was that the insurance companies wouldn't be able to defend itself against potential bad actors, and that may cause the policy amounts or policy price to go up so high that that they would become unaffordable for pilots. So this compromise was trying to narrow the scope of the deniability and at the same time maintain kind of a more reasonable price control on the price of the policy itself.
Okay. Madam Chair, I don't want to blow this up again. If you guys are happy, then that's fine. But I'm just still a little bit different.
Other questions or discussion from members? Senator Prettner-Solin.
So, thank you, Madam Chair. I would move that Senate File 91 be recommended to pass and re-refer to Judiciary.
On Senator Solin's motion that Senate File 2491 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary. Discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Kavanaugh and Mr. Pearson. And Senator Olson. Senate File 833 is before us. It was, I don't know where, Senator Prettner-Solin, but her committee heard this bill, I think, in the last week or so, and maybe even heard it last year at some point. And it's been referred to us, and then it's going to go to Judiciary after us. So. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm happy to be here on behalf of Senate File 833. And as many of you know, this bill has generated a lot of calls and emails. And so I'd like to first begin by talking about generally, and then I will ask Deputy Attorney General Karen Olson to walk you through the bill and give some more detail. But I'd like to first address generally some misconceptions about this bill, what it does and its intent, and give you a little historical background. This bill actually was not heard last session. It was introduced, but it was never heard in committee because there was a hope that we would be able to sit down with the industry and that they would let us know what some of their specific concerns were about this bill and that we could attempt to address those concerns in the language of the legislation.
Senator Prettner-Solin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Olson, we did hear your bill in committee. Yes, we did. And then we laid it over for the interim so that work could be done on it.
I know it is hard to remember from what happened yesterday, let alone last year.
Yes.
So, but I thought that it had been heard. Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for that clarification. And thank you, Senator Prettner-Solin. And I have to admit, last year was kind of a whirlwind for me. But I knew that we had the point, I guess, I was trying to make is that we looked for an opportunity to to try to hear from the industry what their concerns were. And as the Attorney General's office will be there, will let you know, there was an attempt to have that garner that kind of information, but nothing specific was ever offered in the way of any suggestions or any language. I made an attempt to meet with the industry and again ask for that kind of specific language right at the beginning of session, and did not receive anything until we had a meeting at 7:30 last night. I want everyone on the committee to know that we have attempted to listen to the industry's concerns, and we are, and we remain, as we hopefully go forward through this process, open to specific suggestions that do not negate the intent of the of this bill and the consumer protection issues that we have heard so many complaints about. And then I'd also just like to say, from a little bit of background in terms of kind of the bigger picture, I've been told, as I've met with people within the industry, that there are actually consumer legislation being brought forth, and I was told, and I don't know this firsthand to be accurate, but I was told all 50 states. And so this is an issue of concern that isn't just a problem in Minnesota. This is an issue of concern around the country. Minnesota previously passed legislation that dealt with wire, that addressed some of these consumer issues, but the court said that the manner in which that legislation was passed ran afoul of federal preemption. And so we came back and we've basically drafted a bill that simply gives people information and makes sure that they have that information and agree with the terms of their cell phone contract, so that if there's going to be a two-year extension, the person has to be asked and there has to be documentation that they were informed and agreed to that extension up front, because there were many complaints that wasn't happening. A person has to know what their coverage area is going to be, and we're not talking about the fact that if you go down in a tunnel it may not work, or you know, if you have poorer reception in some areas than other. We're talking about basically knowing the general area that's going to be encompassed. The bill also requires that charges and fees, which were often being mislabeled as one thing or that which people weren't being forewarned about, have to be clearly delineated and agreed to, and that there has to be a record that the person was given this information and agreed to it, that both parties would have a copy of. So knowing that there was going to be this legislation coming from many different directions, again, I've been told, and I've been told by some within the industry, not in the public meetings, but on individual meetings, that the industry decided as a whole, rather than working with us, to basically try to stop any regulation and try to prevent anything from going forward. And you can see, as I gave you all this sheet here, this didn't just come up lately, and it isn't just designed to address issues in Minnesota. This is a full court press that's going on nationwide, where these things are being emailed to people who are then forwarding things to us that are form letters that have come to them because of these unsolicited emails. On the back side of this is a response that I had from a constituent who was really unhappy about receiving this email. And I think his comments are probably say better than anything I could have said. I just got this in my email this morning. And I think I just point your attention to the sixth paragraph here, where this constituent says, "I speak with authority on this subject. I've negotiated over $2 billion in telecommunications contracts on behalf of customers and am intimately familiar with the many contractual and pricing devices used by the telecommunications companies to ensure that their business relationships are heavily one-sided in their favor." And what this letter does is go through and delineate what those business practices are and how they've been used for the industry. And again, this is something that just came unsolicited to me. I also had a phone call this morning from a senior citizen in my district who called to tell me that she was worried that I was trying to take away her cell phone or make her prices go way up. And I said, well, ma'am, this is exactly what the bill does. And I went through and explained the provisions. And she said, well, I'm in favor of that. I've had problems myself. And she was then irate and offered to call into this committee and say how she'd been solicited by the phone. She didn't have to make the phone call. She got heavy pressure tactics. And then they said, we'll make the phone call for you. It's free. All you have to do is say that you don't want your cell phone prices to go up or to lose your cell phone. And so we know, we've all been getting these things. I just think it's important to talk about what's behind them. Because we're here trying to be fair as legislators, but the consumers don't have a voice at the table with an organization as this organization does, and undoubtedly has spent a lot of money trying to influence our voters. I think it's important that we look very carefully at those tactics and really pay attention, not to where the who has the most money and who has the ability to use that type of influence, but what are the real facts and concerns and needs of people in our state. We had in the last committee meeting a couple of witnesses who came and gave firsthand stories about how their contracts had been extended against their express instructions and after being assured that that would not happen. And these were recent things that just happened. These are just a couple of examples. Senator Dahl was on that committee, and he had been talking to one of the companies beforehand where they had told him they're no longer doing this and this is no longer a problem. He went home that night and he received a call from his daughter who told him that this exact problem had just happened to her. So this is, again, the kind of thing that we're trying to address because it is an ongoing problem. The most complained about issue that we have in terms of consumer protection issues, not only in this state, but around the country. However, I will say, and I appreciate the opportunity we had to sit down and discuss some type of potential for a compromise or look for some way to try to address concerns that were expressed by the cell phone industry when we sat down last night. But as I said, they presented us with an amendment, which we saw for the first time, and which would essentially be a delete-all amendment. And what that delete-all amendment would do is basically remove any accountability for the cell phone industry with respect to making sure that people have this information, there's documentation, they received it, and it wasn't just available somewhere. Now, I'm not sure if that amendment will have been changed by the time it's offered today, if it is, but that's what it did. It also did not require for cell phone extensions anything other than that they were that the customer was notified. And I would submit that the way the language is written, that notification could come in the way of a bill that the customer will find out about when they get that bill after the fact, because there was nothing to make sure that that doesn't happen in the language they presented. The areas of concern that were brought up in a meeting we had last Friday, which were different issues, were issues they had related to business, prepaid phones, and the definition of business, prepaid phones, and third-party charges. After the Attorney General has walked us through the details of the bill, I just want you to know that if this committee has concerns about those areas, we have an amendment which would take those out, basically, for this session. I don't think that's the way we should go. But if there is a concern that that we just narrow and limit the focus of this, rather than moving to a delete-all amendment, which basically guts our bill, I'd ask you to look at those issues as something that we could consider in the way of a compromise. Thank you.
Okay. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Senators. I'm Karen Olson, Deputy Attorney General at Minnesota Attorney General's Office. The Attorney General's Office is supporting this bill and this legislation because there is a real problem with the industry and how they're treating their customers. The cell phone industry has consistently ranked for the last 3 years as the number one complained about industry and Better Business Bureau. I should also mention up front that ARP is also in support of this legislation. This legislation is really providing some basic consumer protections. It is allowing the consumer, when they purchase a cell phone company, they live in northern Minnesota, they live in southern Minnesota, that they understand where that cell phone's going to work. It's also allowing the consumer to know exactly what they have to pay for the cell phone. What are the charges per month? What are the minutes that are going to cost me? In addition, the bill is requiring them to give required disclosure regarding government taxes. So again, the consumer knows the true price of the service that they're contracting for. As in the landline phones, there has been a problem with third-party billings appearing on customers' cell phone bills. This legislation is requiring that the cell phone industry do similar to what the landline industry has already been required to do by the legislature. And if a third-party billing appears on a customer's cell phone bill, that third party needs to provide evidence that there's authorization, that they can't just cram an amount onto the bill, and that there's also a procedure set up so that the consumer has the right to dispute the charges. One big issue that has been the subject of hundreds of complaints to our office has been the unauthorized extension of contracts. Now, here, we're not talking about when you originally purchase a phone, you walk into a cell phone company, you agree to buy it, you agree to a 2-year contract, and you agree to a termination fee. What we're talking about is scores of complaints of people who have no idea that somewhere along the line, when they thought during that 2-year period, you know, that say May of 2008, my cell phone contract was going to expire, that somewhere along the line, they unknowingly and without disclosure had their contract extended. We have received many complaints. I have personally read hundreds of complaints where people say, I was called, I was told I was getting a good discount because I was a good customer. I was simply trying to increase my minutes. I bought a new phone. I paid full price for it. And over again, they're saying, I asked the representative, was I going to be have my contract extended? And I was assured no. But at the end of the day, when they go to cancel that contract, they find that every time they made a small change, then in fact it was extended and the 2 years was running again. What's the problem with this? The problem is that they have to then pay an early termination fee. It also is a problem because it prevents the consumer from shopping the industry to going to a competitor to trying to get a better price. If they are locked into a contract, they won't be able to go to another industry. Just last week, Business Week wrote an article about Sprint, calling Sprint's wake-up call. And there they indicate that workers at Sprint and Extel were required to hit targets for renewing contracts or retaining customers. They're also saying that these workers were giving $2,000 to $3,000 bonuses per month to extend consumers' contracts. This is a problem. It's a problem that the consumers have a right to know what they're contracting for. This bill is designed with that purpose. Senator Olson had indicated, I personally met with almost every one of the major cell phone carriers last fall. I have been in other meetings where stakeholders' interests were discussed. We have asked for language. We have indicated the willingness to work with the industry and have been told instead that they're simply not going to give language. I urge the committee to pass this legislation through.
Madam Chair?
Oh,
Miss.
I got a haircut a couple days ago. How are you?
Mr. Chair?
Thank you.
I believe at this time we have someone here from who'd like to testify. They're not on the list, but someone, Keith Wigel on behalf of ARP.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Keith Wagle. I'm the advocacy director with AARP Minnesota. And I believe in your packets you have testimony that our state president, Skip Humphrey, we were hoping that the legislative schedule would allow him to be both at the state office building and here at the same time, but it hasn't worked out. From a consumer standpoint, this is AARP's top consumer protection issue for this year. We appreciate the work that the Attorney General's office, and we thank Representative Wilson for her work on it. And as the discussion would go forward today, we would hope to keep the bill as intact as it came out of the previous committee. In that, there was one provision that AARP had supported. I believe it's subdivision 6 of the bill. One of the concerns we have is that for the average individual to be dealing with the contract and the strength of the cell phone companies, we feel it's pretty one-sided. And we believe the legislation before you is a way to at least give disclosure and information for consumers to make decisions, hopefully make comparative decisions. And in the event that things don't work out and there is a call for perhaps some type of redress, the Subdivision 6 would simply leave in place some of the provisions that a consumer would have in dealing with the companies. So we appreciate your support on the bill.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And basically what in the last committee, an amendment was offered on behalf of ARP. It was something that they had put together. And contracts right now, some of the contracts, the one I was shown last night by AT&T, basically requires a customer to give up the right to seek redress through the court system if their normal rights that they would have to go to court, and says that they must be bound by arbitration. Other types of situations typically would give the parties at the time a right to make that election, whether they wanted to be bound by arbitration or not. And because a number of cell phone companies today are not giving people, or they're requiring people to give up their normal legal rights, and they're requiring them in some small print in the contracts to agree to a mandatory arbitration clause, that was the nature of their offered amendment, which was accepted by the former committee. Mr. Chair, I believe there are, I don't know if you have any questions at this time, but I know that there are people from the industry here to testify as well.
Well, you can pick anybody you'd like to come up, Senator, if you had any more folks that'd like to visit with us.
Mr. Chair, I don't have any more witnesses.
Okay. I think there are a couple on the other side, so
right.
We'll hear from any questions at this point for
Mr. Chair.
Senator Sparks.
Ms. Olson, in your earlier testimony, you talked about hundreds of complaints. Do you have any exact number in 2007 of how many wireless complaints the Attorney General's office fielded?
Senator
Olson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sparks, I'll defer that question to the Attorney General's office.
Mr. Chair, Senator,
thank you.
As you know, generally under the Data Practices Act, the consumer complaint data is private data. However, last year during the legislative session, the summary data for wireless complaints was provided, and the wireless complaints represented approximately 1,061 complaints, whereas total utility complaints were 2,951. So it did account for 36%. And I can tell you that it is a significant amount of energy and resources are spent by the Attorney General's office trying to mediate these complaints with the company. And in addition, generally speaking, as a rule of thumb, only approximately 1% of consumers actually complain to a government agency, to another agency. And in fact, most of the people that do end up complaining to a government agency, the Better Business Bureau, have taken steps to contact the company first and resolve the issue. So generally, by the time we're seeing a complaint, they've already tried to work it out directly with the company.
Pretty smart there. Okay. Thank you. Any further questions at this time? Senator Scogin.
Mr. Chair, just curious how the 1,061 complaints would be a lot. If there was 2,000 customers, how many customers do we have that are using wireless?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I don't know the exact amount. I presume there's millions of them, but I don't think you have to go just on the Attorney General's figures. A thousand complaints regarding any industry is an extraordinary amount of complaints. We're not seeing the same regarding any other major industry in the country. But you don't have to rely on just the Attorney General's figures, because this is a national problem. The Better Business Bureau routinely ranks it as the most complained about industry in the nation. In addition, Consumers Report indicate that it's the most complained about industry, and that the consumers are extremely unhappy with the contract extensions and the problems associated with the cell phone industry.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, Senator Scogin, I see the Wireless Association says it's minuscule percentages that complain, but you know, I mean, I've written my cell phone company to complain before. I hadn't thought of contacting the Attorney General's office, and I mean, I work here around the Attorney General's office a lot. I think there are probably, I don't think it's 1 in 100. I think it's 1 in 1,000 of the people who complain to the Attorney General. I bet there are 1,000 times as many complaints as they have, people who are upset at their companies. I don't know where this is coming from, that nobody has any problems with their cell phone providers. I mean, I can't get over this yet. The letters we're getting on this and this heavy regulation that they have to tell you about the contract, I'm befuddled by how saying that they're only 1,000, 1,200, whatever, from the Attorney General's office. I sure hear from a lot of people, friends, relatives, not people calling me to tell me they got a complaint with it, but in conversations with people saying how they're irritated at their cell phone company about this or that, and most people just kind of, well, it's not the biggest deal in the world, it's a few bucks here, or they're irritated, or they'll stay with the company another year. I'm just curious where the onerous regulation is in this bill.
Senator Sparks.
Back to the complaints, and I'm just wondering what does qualify as a complaint. If I'm driving down the road and I drop a call, is that a complaint? Are we talking extension complaints? Are there any certain things that qualify what a complaint is regarding the wireless?
Well, a complaint is a, Mr. Chair, Senator. The complaint would encompass phone calls and letters to the office, but primarily letters to the office where they actually have wrote in and said, my contract was extended 3 times. They're asking for a $400 termination fee. Please help me. I mean, the letters are distressing. These aren't simply, I'm upset. They're and the theme is consistent in all of the letters.
Senator Vandiver, did you wish to speak?
I did. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know if I were to pursue the, if I didn't like this bill, if I were to pursue the approach that people don't complain about their cell phones. I think they do, and I think there are some problems with how cell phone companies deal with constituents. I just don't think that's the approach. Now, I have a rule myself, I don't carry bills more than a page long because I get confused myself, but I think, I don't know that this is the answer here, but there are some problems in the industry, and I think maybe a little more concise approach would be better, but I think there are problems with the cell phone industry, and I don't think they can come up here and say that everybody's happy and that everybody's dealt with fairly, and I just don't think that's the case from just dealing with my constituents.
Katie, maybe we'll hear from the opposition. I've got a couple of names down here, so maybe you guys could go to the back bench and we'll get the next group up. Is it Jerry Keegan and Kevin Huntington? Do you wish to come forward?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnson.
Sir Chairman, following up on what Senator Vandiver said, I agree. I think we all have some issues with our cell phones, but I don't see how we can regulate from a state-by-state position, which is a global industry. I'm just not getting there. I just can't figure out how this legislation even came about in a state. I mean, they're going to have to approve it.
Senator Olson, did you wish to respond?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Johnson. We have, the federal government is looking at legislation that deals and addresses with some aspects of cell phone regulation that is preempted by federal law. However, to say that as a state we don't have a responsibility to our constituents where we are not preempted to deal with consumer protection issues would mean that we would have no consumer protection laws in this state. We have what's called the Fair Claims Practices Act, for example, which regulates consumer protection issues related to insurance. And to the extent that we're able to regulate the insurance industry and that it's not something that's ERISA and self-insured, we have a host of consumer protection-related things to make sure that people aren't cheated, defrauded, or even that they're treated fairly when it's not that severe. So I think it would be really unfortunate if we were to send the message to consumers that as a state we don't take seriously our responsibility to address their concerns as consumers and that we're abdicating that responsibility to the federal government.
And I understand Senator Metzen asked if there was anybody opposed. Is that what you...
Follow-up.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No,
Senator Johnson.
Shoot, now I forgot what it was.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No.
We got a while to go here.
We do have
another bill.
Okay, go on.
Okay, if you think of it. Okay. We have Mr. Keegan and Mr. Huntington. Welcome to the committee. Please just give your name and identify yourself for the tape. And
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I want to thank you for the opportunity to appear before you today. My name is Jerry Keegan. I am Director of State Legislative Affairs at CTIA, the Wireless Association. CTIA is the International Trade Association for the wireless industry, representing wireless carriers, manufacturers, and Internet service providers. I'm here to speak in opposition to Senate File 833. Over the past 15 years, wireless has evolved into a highly competitive industry because it was allowed to grow based on customer demand and not government mandate. Consider this. It took more than 21 years for color TVs to reach 100 million consumers, more than 90 years for landline service to reach 100 million consumers, but less than 17 years for wireless to reach 100 million consumers. Today, there are over 250 million wireless consumers across the country, 3.7 million right here in Minnesota alone. How did we get here? We got here through Congress's decision in 1993 to create a national wireless regulatory framework by deregulating wireless rates and by tearing down state barriers to market entry. Since that decision, wireless prices have fallen 80%, while innovation continues to create new products and services each year. Today, the industry not only competes on price, but also on customer service, trial periods, data services, new devices, prepaid services, coverage mapping, and clearer billing statements. With industry growth does come industry responsibility. With the hypergrowth in the industry over the past 5 to 10 years, we did have and do have hiccups. What industry wouldn't? But while we're not perfect, we do listen to our consumers every day because my members, the wireless carriers, know that if they do not listen to consumers, they will simply fail. That is why in 2003, CTIA drafted a code of wireless service that its members, carriers, adopted. This code has been an integral part of delivering enhanced customer service to wireless subscribers throughout the country. The code, which is followed in all 50 states, has allowed wireless subscribers to make informed decisions when selecting a wireless service plan. As part of the code, wireless carriers disclose rates and terms of service, including any applicable early termination fees and off-network and roaming charges. They also provide consumers with coverage maps, a minimum 14-day trial period, clearer billing statements, and agree to respond to consumer inquiries and complaints received from state and federal industry agencies in a timely manner. The adoption of the code has paid dividends to consumers. These dividends, I think, are best exemplified by the low wireless complaint rate both nationally and here in Minnesota. In fact, the number of wireless complaints filed at the FCC have decreased year over year since the code's adoption. For example, the FCC received 29,478 complaints in 2004. In 2005, the number of complaints decreased 12% to to 25,942.
Forgive me, Mr. Keegan. I don't know if you're going to go through all these pages.
All of that.
Because I don't know. Did you present this testimony in Senator Pretner Solon's?
No, did not.
Okay. Because we want to kind of get to the bill itself, and I think the author has some amendments that she wants us to consider, and so we want to maybe.
It'll be real short.
Okay.
I promise. In 2006, the complaints declined 33% to 17,415. This represents a wireless complaint rate of 0.0075% for 2006. In fact, according to FCC data, out of the four industries the Commission monitors for complaints, wireless was well behind radio and television broadcasting and the heavily state-regulated wireline telecommunications industry. Whether nationally or in Minnesota, the wireless complaint rate is low. As the Deputy Attorney General said, according to information released to CTIA last December, the office received 924 complaints in 2004. In 2005, complaints declined even further to 912, and further declined in 2006 to 718. In 2007, the AG's office reported receiving slightly over 1,000 complaints from the more than 3.7 million wireless customers in this state. That represents a wireless complaint rate equal to 0.029%. Wireless carriers actively and continuously listen to their customers. The five major wireless carriers in this country have already announced that they will prorate early termination fees. In addition, the four largest carriers last year announced that they will open their networks to outside devices and applications, thus providing enhanced wireless consumer freedom. Based on declining prices, a low complaint rate, the industry's adoption of pro-consumer policies, and tremendous innovation, we oppose Senate File 833. We oppose it because we think it's unnecessary. The Attorney General already has the power and the authority to enforce consumer protection laws of general applicability, which it already has done to allegedly bad actors in the wireless marketplace. We think the bill, with its Minnesota-only regulatory regime, will have unintended consequences and threaten the benefits of national rate plans. For these reasons, we oppose the bill. I want to thank you and any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Keegan. Yes, Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I remembered while you were out of
I could tell by the smile.
When you were out of the room, I asked the question about how we can regulate a global industry state by state, and Senator Olson responded. And then the follow-up would be, my concern is I know every time I call and deal with my plan, I am not calling in the state of Minnesota. I'm calling Texas. I'm calling everywhere in the country. And sometimes I don't even know if I'm calling within the country. I don't think we can regulate from within the state a global industry when the contracts are not always written. You have to go to a kiosk in a mall to write a plan in Minnesota. Otherwise, it's being written in other states, other countries.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Any contract that's entered into in this state can be regulated under state law. I mean, that's just a general principle. The fact that you might be dealing with a customer service person somewhere else doesn't mean that we don't have the right as a state to determine fair consumer practices as it relates to contracts that are entered into in our state. And again, what this bill is doing really is just simply making sure that people have the information in the, and that those contracts it requires people to be informed of certain information at the time that they entered into these contracts, and for contracts not to be extended without their specific agreement and consent.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There can be no consistency state by state, because every time I call, I'm talking to somebody else in a different state. They are not going to know state by state which state has specific regulations. It's impossible. There's 50 states, and there's probably 3,000 operators taking these calls.
Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, Senator Johnson, on that point, when you have credit cards or anything else, or you get a product and it says warranty is only good for 90 days or something, they will say, this does not apply in Wisconsin or Texas or wherever else because they got longer warranties, because they have different, or you this is automatically renewed, except that doesn't apply in Minnesota and this state and that state. So you can do it. The phone operator, if they are a contract with you, says that they can't extend it without notifying you. Then the person there has on their chart that it's all computerized anyway. They have it. They can do it because every other industry does. It's not a question of not being able to do it because all the other industries are able to, and it happens all the time, and it happens in all the states.
Not well.
Okay.
And I want to make something clear, and Senator Olson, when I left, you did go down point by point about what the bill does, but I don't think it precludes an early termination fee. It just says you must disclose at the time a point of sale if there is one, and the person had, they have to do it at the point of sale. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's right. After the court case ruled with respect to the earlier language that the legislation passed previously, this bill has been narrowed down to really just be talking about disclosures and consumer protection issues, not telling them that they can't do something with respect to their contract, but saying that from a consumer protection standpoint, the consumer has to be specifically agreeing to that and made aware of that.
Okay, thank you. Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, I have some questions for Mr. Keegan. You talked about how many customers there are, and I think when there's a good, useful product, I think same thing with personal computers. I don't think it's because necessarily personal computer companies are great companies. They seem to be pretty good, though. I had pretty good service and everything else from them. But you made arguments about how few complaints you're hearing about and so on, which I don't know that your members would say the same thing because I bet they get a lot of calls. But I'm wondering if you could tell me what in the bill, specifically what provision you think is an unreasonable disclosure. Just any one of them that you think is unreasonable.
Mr. Keegan.
Madam Chair, Senator, as I see the bill, a lot of it is duplicative in nature. We're already providing coverage maps. In fact, most of the major wireless carriers have gone above providing paper wireless maps. They provide street-based, street-level mapping technology on the Internet. For example, if you duplicate an industry market-based effort into statute, we're now forced to hand out coverage maps when in 5 years customers may not want a coverage map, a paper coverage map that is quite frankly outdated the minute it is printed. Wireless carriers are deploying services throughout the state weekly, and they are placing cell site towers in areas that don't have it. They are providing better network quality. So the minute that coverage map is printed, it's outdated. So we duplicate efforts in statute when the industry, the market, is already doing it. I think when we look at disclosures in that sense, that if the carriers are doing it, we're duplicating the effort through statute, and we are quite possibly slowing innovation, quite possibly just not ensuring that the next thing that a customer may want or customers may want we'll be able to provide, because now we're handing out coverage maps or we're making this disclosure or that disclosure. Down the road, consumers may not necessarily desire those things.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Keegan, the map one is a hard one for me to understand because my cell phone doesn't have the roaming charges or anything. So I can't know what customers need in terms of the map. But the fact that you notify somebody about early termination fee provisions and stuff, if you say it's already there, I don't see how that bothers you. I mean, if you're already complying with this, I'd say great. But I'm not convinced that, I think from what we're hearing from the Attorney General, what I hear from people who just grumble about what happened to their cell phone extension of contract or other things. I'm wondering what is there in the skip the map one because I don't understand the need for that because my phone doesn't have that and we all tend to go by our own experiences that way. But disclosing to people that you could raise the price during the term of their contract, is that an unfair thing to disclose to the consumer?
Mr. Keegan.
Mr. Chair, Senator, no, it isn't. The carriers are already doing that. They're already making these disclosures. They're already providing this information to consumers. So I don't think it's unfair at all.
That's right.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chairman, because when I see, I don't know if you put these flyers out or not, but when I got these letters from constituents, I think I got five or six of them. When I read the letters, I was trying to think, what's in this bill? I thought this must be the most outrageous thing in the world, and I wondered what Senator Olson was doing. And then I kind of read through the bill, and it wasn't anything like this. I mean, I think this is more misleading. If this is the way the industry defends itself, I think it's all the more argument for why we need the bill. I just don't think this is an honest explanation of what the bill does and why people should contact us. And when I read these letters of people upset about it, I think they're being misled. I'm curious what the Burnsville Chamber of Commerce, I'm curious if they saw a lot more information than this, because it seems strange that people feel that passionately against something like this when people I talk to on the street who, not raising the issue, but when you talk about cell phones in a conversation, so many times people explain their concerns about the way it's done.
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Keegan, I'm also concerned. I've heard this presentation in the Communications Committee, and I'm even more resolved to side with Senator Olson's bill after I've seen this literature and the kinds of emails and phone calls that I've been getting. And to me, this bill is a no-brainer. And I've heard those same stories that people are talking about. And maybe you say you are disclosing, but are you disclosing 6 months into the contract? Are you disclosing when they get another phone? Are you disclosing when they get more minutes? Because that's where people are really getting the short end of the stick. And so I believe that this is a very simple bill that just lets consumers know that they are going to get more termination fees, or that they are going to have a 2-year extension. And I can name 100 friends that have had problem with their cell phone usage. And I believe that this bill is just about protecting the consumer, and I would bet that you spent more money on lobbying against this than it's going to cost you to implement the bill. You're free to respond, but I respectfully had to get that off my chest.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator.
Mr. Keegan.
I understand the frustration that may be out there amongst consumers. As I said in my testimony, this industry isn't perfect. It grew tremendously rather quickly. We had hiccups. I think we're resolving a lot of those issues with carriers announcing that they're going to prorate early termination fees. They're going to open up their networks. They're going to allow for greater contracting flexibility. These are the positive steps forward that the industry is undertaking every day. And I think when the market is answering that, I would prefer that it happen that way and not have something that may cause unintended consequences down the line be enacted.
I would just like to, for the record, say that the only complaint I've ever had about my prepaid phone is that Senator Marty programmed it to ring the Star Spangled Banner. And I don't know how to change it. But, and actually, it just, everybody stands up when my phone rings.
You still have it?
Yes, it still has that, Senator Marty, because I do not know how to change it, but I like it. Mr. Huntington, I think you would like to speak, and members, we are able to stay here. Did you announce that? We're able to stay in this room until we're done here, so I'm going to do that. I know some members may have to leave. Senator Olson's going to have to go as well. She and I both serve on Judiciary. It'll be in room 15, so
thank
not
you.
In this room, so... we can stay and get through the next two bills. Senator Prettner-Solon.
Madam Chair, I'm going to have to take four of these members to my committee.
We may vote on letting her do that. Okay. Yes.
And I have a half-hour commitment at 3.
Okay. Well, then. By the way, that sound on our tape probably means that somebody's cell phone is ringing.
Right.
That's what I think that indicates. Somebody has their cell phone someplace. Even if it's on, I think even if it's on vibrate, it does that. It's 10 after 2, if I can see that correctly. So
Madam Chair,
I'd really like you to be done like by 2:30, but I want Mr. Huntington to have an opportunity to speak, and then perhaps we'll get to your amendments. And Senator Gerlach, you had a question.
Well, I'll let it go.
Okay. Mr. Huntington, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you very much for allowing me the opportunity to speak today. My name is Kevin Huntington, and I'm the owner of a company called Metro Home Connection Realty, and I want to make it clear that I'm here as a small business owner and a consumer of wireless technology, and I'm not from the industry. Walking into the hearing room today, I was struck by the sign on the door prohibiting cell phones and beepers in this room, and I'm certain that there's probably not a single person in here without a cell phone or PDA on them. I know for myself, over the past 7 years, I've had service. I've shopped around and I've had service from wireless companies from three different companies. During this 7 year period, I've noticed more choices, better quality of service, lower costs, and more innovation. I'm here because as a result of these innovations, I used to work for one of the larger, more established real estate companies in town that charges full commissions, and I'm sure we're all familiar with them. And I realized that as a result of the technology getting to the point where it is, I was able to leave that company and start my own business. And since then, in the last 4 years, I've hired two additional agents to help me with the volume of business that I have now. Each one of us operate our offices virtually. We run entirely on wireless phones. We don't have a landline at all. My fax is actually done through the internet, so I have no land connection at all, neither do my agents for the business that we run. Because of this, we operate our offices virtually. We don't actually have a land-based office. We operate from wherever we're at, which has allowed my company and my agents to charge less to the people that we work with. We charge lower commissions on the listing side, and we actually are able to then rebate a portion of the seller paid commissions back to our buyers at the end of a transaction. This is done because we rely completely on wireless technology. We use wireless telephones, text messaging, and wireless internet access. My concern with the bill at hand is the fact that the regulations within it would create an island of red tape for this industry. I've shopped around myself and had the opportunity to choose between the different providers, and despite what a lot of other people have problems with, when I've had a problem, I've gone to a different company, and I've been successful doing that. I'm concerned that the Minnesota-specific regulations in this bill will make it more difficult for the wireless providers that we all have the option to choose from to provide the innovation, the lower costs, and the quality service that we're used to. Therefore, I just am here to register my opposition to Senate File 833. Thank you very much.
Donington, thank you. Thank you for showing the creativity and your entrepreneurial skill. I used to be a real estate salesperson and had to pay rent every month, you know, in the office where I was, and we didn't even have car phones at the time I was doing that. So I'm impressed. That's exciting to hear that you've been able to do that.
Thank you.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would just like to say as well that I don't think any of us would dispute the value of our cell phones. Or the fact that, in fact, it's the very fact that they are so valuable and that people don't just have the opportunity to feel free to walk away from having that service that puts people at a disadvantage in terms of the bargaining position with some of these tactics or some of these practices, I guess I'll say, that have been used by cell phone companies. And I would also just like to briefly address a couple of the comments that were made. You know, the coverage map issue is one that I'm happy to continue to talk to the industry about as I hope this progresses. I have a hard time envisioning how someone's going to complain because they get a service map that later adds more coverage than what has originally been put in front of them to begin with. But I did read through the industry's kind of outline of their language and adoption of their
rules that some of, not all, but some of the cell phone companies are going to be conforming with. And as respects coverage maps, there's language in there that I think we could use to incorporate into the bill to give them some comfort. That hasn't been offered by the industry at this point, but I'd be happy to work with them. And I think we can address that issue by incorporating some of their language.
Senator Olson, just on that point, I had read this apparently the same thing you did from the Wireless Association. Excuse me. And sorry. Where you have the coverage map that accurately depicts the area, mm-hmm. I thought you might say a coverage map showing where service is generally available, since that's the link. And so I was going to suggest that.
Madam Chair, we were thinking along exactly the same lines, and if you would like to make that motion, I'd be happy to consider that a friendly amendment. Or would, unless you would rather, unless you would.
I need you to make the motion, Senator Olson. But I will read it. If it's on page 1, line 22, after the word map, delete the rest of the line and insert showing where service is generally available. Line 1.23, strike all of the language through the word provided. Does that?
Madam Chair, I'd move that language.
Anybody, you understand what we're doing? So because the specific map or accurately depicting is pretty tough. Any discussion? All those in favor of that amendment, say aye.
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 Opposed? That amendment is adopted. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
See, now,
Senator Vandeveer.
Now the bill is getting to describe what we have today. So there's, I mean, why do we need that even in there?
Senator Vandeveer, you mean what I just did?
I mean, why do we need the coverage area in there? Because they do tell you generally what your coverage area is. So...
Well, Senator Vandeveer, this would say it's required to be done.
So we're just giving them little reminders?
Madam Chair, Senator Vandeveer, there have been a number of complaints, many complaints to the Attorney General's office and complaints that the Better Business Bureau has documented where people have not been given this information or there has not been service generally available in the area that they were told it would be available. So this is an area where there have been many complaints and an area of concern. To the extent that it's being done, it shouldn't be a problem for the companies to simply comply with the statutory requirement. We're trying to give them the language that they say that they're following, and this isn't something that all companies have even incorporated. But we're saying because there are so many complaints that this will have to be done, and we're trying to find some compromise that makes people more comfortable.
It just seems to me,
Senator Vandeveer,
Madam Chair, some of this can be used against the consumer. When you know, because we do have a map of where it's generally available and to keep you from getting out even if you can't get the service. We need to be careful with that.
Okay. Senator Olson, I'm sorry. The chair has been up and down. I had a bill to present. I did that. Then got called out for something else. And I want to apologize to the people who are here to speak on Senate File 2747, Senator Betzold's bill. We are going to hear that next Tuesday evening. I'm sorry, the session went over our time and made it tough, and I want to give everybody a fair opportunity to speak on that. So we're just going to finish today with Senator Olson's bill. We'll be here at 6 o'clock on Tuesday, March 4th. And so members can put that on their calendar. We actually are going to have evening meetings Tuesday, Thursday, next week, and the week after. We have so many bills.
I'm getting my taxes.
Senator Johnson, go ahead, invite your tax preparer to come with you. Yes. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. At this time, unless there are any more questions, I would take up the amendment we discussed beforehand. And I want to say that I'm not quite sure how to handle this best, because can I move something and vote against it at the same time? I don't know what the way is.
Sure. Senator Olson, I think you are free to do that.
Okay.
Probably there have been senators or representatives who have voted against their own bill from time to time. So, yes, you may. And does Mr. Stang have amendment?
Yes, I'm referring first to the A6 amendment, and I hope that you all have copies of that.
We're about to have them.
Okay.
You want to tell us generally
yes,
what you're doing with this?
Thank you, Madam Chair. In our last committee meeting, we didn't really hear that here, but there was a number of concerns were raised by the industry about the applicability of the bill to prepaying phones and how we would work out handling the notifications in prepay types of situations. And I would first of all state that my position on this is that, well, the language may still need some tweaking, and we haven't been offered that language yet from the industry. I would remain willing to talk to them in a way, because really what we're asking for, again, for example, with cell phones today, a lot of times what people will do is call into the industry and then go through a voice system which will say, do you know this? Yes. Do you know this? Yes. And that way that they have the ability to make sure that they have accurate information. And the two-year contracts don't apply in prepay phone situations anyway. But because that seemed to be such an area of concern, and because I don't think that's the largest area of complaint, as you said, Madam Chair, most of the complaints are coming with these two-year extensions and not having all the information about what's going to be in your bill. The A6 amendment basically eliminates the prepay phones from this bill. The second thing that this amendment does is there were concerns that were raised that somehow this bill was intended to apply when there's been a sale to a business of, say, maybe 10 phones or maybe 2,000 phones, that somehow there was a concern that the industry was going to be expected to have separate agreements from each of the employees using these phones. That was never the intent of the bill. The intent was only that this information would be given to the person purchasing these contracts just as they would as it would be to individual purchasers. And so what the bill does on 1.13 is it defines customer to say that it would be either an individual or a business or corporate entity making a bulk purchase of wireless telecommunications service for use by its employees to make sure that there is not a requirement that that there's no confusion, that they don't have any that they don't have a duty to individual employees. So I guess that's the way that that's the purpose of this amendment. A position might be to take business contracts out of the agreement entirely. And I guess if someone were to want to do that or want to offer an amendment, I think then on line 1.4 you would just simply change that to say instead of or a business, you could say and does not include a business, so forth and so forth. But I guess, again, this is really not a motion that I support, but I know that it does address some of the current concerns that the industry raised. And so for those people who are worried about those particular concerns, I wanted to make this available as for the committee's consideration. So,
well, Senator Olson, I appreciate that. I really felt that prepaid probably didn't need need to be in here, because those are the kind of phones that you can just walk into a store and buy off the rack. And so, as far as the business, I'd let the committee weigh in on that. Is Senator Vandeveer, you?
I would leave the business in because tons of people have their phones.
Senator Marty?
Madam Chair, why don't we divide the amendment between 1.8 and 1.9? Is that the appropriate place?
Senator Marty,
Madam Chair?
I'd like to divide. Yes, Senator Olson.
Just to clarify for Senator Marty,
excuse me.
This bill does not take businesses out. The way that the amendment is proposed right now, businesses stay in. We just clarify that what we're talking about to satisfy the industry so that they don't think that they have to do this 2,000 times if they make one sale. So that was just so as this is, if we want to take cell phones out, I mean not cell phones, prepaid phones out, then this would be an amendment you should support. If it's something where we think that prepaid phones should stay in, then you wouldn't want to support this amendment.
Right. And Senator Olson, then we aren't dividing the amendment then, Senator Marty. And I don't know if that saying on line 1.4 of the amendment, a business or corporate entity, I know that they can be a person or an individual, that the corporation can be defined that way, but I don't think this necessarily does that. I don't know, Mr. Stang, if there's... it says corporate entity. I don't know if that means individual. We're talking about, like, the person who... the purchasing agent of the business. They're the person to whom the disclosures must be made. I think that's what the amendment means to say. Is that
would a more general term like business customer make sense there? I don't know. You're making an argument on corporate form, I think, Madam Chair.
Yeah. You know, Senator Olson, I'm going to support the amendment. I think we may want to look at that language. I know what you're trying to accomplish here, and you don't. If the business buys 100 phones, you don't want the telecommunication company to have to make 100 disclosures and have every person sign off on it. So, members, do you understand the amendment? Senator Gerlach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'm confused. So, Senator Olson, the amendment that you offered, you say you don't like it. Do you want the committee to put this amendment on or not?
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, Senator Gerlach, what I wanted was for the committee to have an opportunity to make this decision. I think the clarification language I would support regardless, and if it needs a little bit of fixing up, that's fine. My objection was taking out the idea of trying to regulate prepaid phones, but that seemed to be such a concern that I guess I'll just have to say I'm neutral on that, but if we do continue to if we do take it out here now, I'd want to continue to work on the industry and something that is more specific and addressed to that issue that we could maybe bring back next year.
I think Senator Olson is responding to the concern she's heard from the industry and from others who have been talking about it and talking to other colleagues, that she's trying to respond to some of those concerns. And I think it may be safe to say not everybody's going to love everything that's in the bill when it leaves committee today. It's got a couple more stops to make, and it will receive, you know, further discussion in those places. But I think this is entirely appropriate for us to discuss who the customer is and which type of phone we want this protection for. So there's no more discussion on the Olson Amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted, the A6 amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Olson, did you have any other?
Madam Chair, I don't have any other amendments I'd like to offer. If there had, you know, depending on what questions or concerns the members had, I have other things that I could use. But at this point, I'd be very happy to move the bill.
Chair.
Senator Sparks.
Actually, I do have an amendment that I'd like to offer, the A5 amendment.
Do you have, Senator Olson?
No, Madam Chair, at this point, I don't.
Senator Sparks moves the A5 amendment. I think I'll wait till members have it in front of them. It's members, it is a delete everything amendment.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm going to ask Senator Sparks if I might, if since Senator Olson, I don't think your amendment addresses the two things that she addressed in her amendment. Are you willing to include her language from her amendment so we wouldn't be offering Mr. Stang, I need help, but I think
Madam Chair, I believe this amendment excludes entirely business service sold to business customers. If you look on line 1.16, so that issue is addressed or considered in a different way than the amendment the committee just put on. And on the prepaid issue, I'm looking.
I believe it addresses that.
Mr. Stang, is there language that deals with the with selling to a business? Is that in here someplace?
No, Madam Chair, service sold to business customers would not be covered by the Sparks Amendment at all. It would be outside the scope of the bill. If you look at line 1.16 on the definition of wireless telecommunication service.
Okay, I see. Okay, then my, because we've acted on Subdivision 1 and Subdivision 2.
That's correct, Madam Chair, but I think this is styled as a delete all, so all that would kind of go away if this was adopted.
Okay. Okay, Senator Sparks.
And thank you, Madam Chair, and I want to thank Senator Olson. I know that she's worked hard, and this amendment actually comes out of some of the work group that took place last night between Senator Olson, the Attorney General's office, and some members of the industry. And I do want to thank her for the A6 amendment, because when we did hear this bill in Senator Solon's committee, I think there was some concern about the business-to-business transaction, so I appreciate her taking it out, and that is, too, included in this amendment. The prepaids were also an issue. I know that she's addressed them, and we've done the same thing in this bill. And at that time, I had some problems with the third-party provisions in the bill. Basically, what my bill would do, Madam Chair, is walks it through the definitions in Subdivision 1. Subdivision 2 talks about required disclosures that would take place during the sales transaction. Item number 1 deals with the mapping issue. Under Subdivision 2, again, that would happen during the sales transaction, there is 12 disclosures that are required there, which actually is more than was in Senator Olson's original bill, I believe. Subdivision 3 deals with the billing listing of government taxes and fees. Subdivision 4 talks about the extension and contract length. Subdivision 5 talks about the remedies, and that's something that obviously would be more of a judicial issue. But I think that, you know, we also want to have consumer protection, but I think that could lead to an awful lot of litigation and class action suits. But I'm certainly not an attorney, and that's something that Senator Olson and you yourself, Madam Chair, and the Judiciary Committee would have to deal with. That's kind of a brief overview of the bill. I do have some people that can speak more to it if you want. I obviously want Senator Olson to be able to respond.
Right. I'll let Senator Olson respond. And then if anybody, and Ms. Olson, if you want to as well. But
okay.
And then if there's anybody who wants to speak in support of it, I'll give them the opportunity. But Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill, for the most part, is the delete-all amendment that I saw for the first time last night that the industry, or at least one segment of the industry, brought to me. And I will have to say that in looking at this and looking very carefully at the language, I don't think that this bill improves one bit the customer the situation that we have right now in terms of its, if you read the language very carefully, what's required. And I'll go through and explain why I think that's the case. And then I'd like to turn over to the Attorney General's office to talk about the remedies and explain why I think not only are the remedies proposed unprecedented in the state, but they would actually tie our hands in a way that they're not tied now in terms of the Attorney General's ability to hold the industry accountable. So I'll let her talk about that. But what I'd first like to do is point out to you some of the things that this bill doesn't do. The language in my bill requires that people are specifically informed and agree at the time of sale, and that there's documentation that they got this information and agreement. Because of so many complaints where the industry says they had this information and customers say they had no idea about this information.
This doesn't require that this information can't be buried on the back page of 10 pages of contract. This doesn't say that they have to agree. This just says that they have to be given the same old type of thing. The one thing I have to say the industry did is yesterday it said that it just has to be available somewhere. So it could be available on the Internet, and there wasn't even a requirement that it be given to them. This says that they have to be given, but there's no way to enforce any complaints because there's no requirement that the customer agrees and there's no documentation or record. With regard to Subdivision 3, listing of government taxes and fees, again, there's no requirement for any type of an agreement. And I think basically the whole point was that people were getting bills on charges on their bills after the fact that they hadn't agreed to and weren't aware of up front when they signed the sales contract. In terms of extensions in length, in contract length, again, if you look very carefully at the language, it just says that the person, the carrier must specifically disclose to the customer that the acceptance of the goods, service, or charge will result in an extension. Well, once again, that happens when the person gets a bill and this has been put on their bill. Now they've disclosed it. There's no requirement that they have to agree up front. There's no requirement for any documentation that the person was informed and had to agree. So basically what this amendment would do, and Senator Sparks, I say this with all due respect to you because I think your concerns that we tried to address with my amendment that I offered earlier are valid ones. I do have an amendment with regard to the third-party billing. If that is the wish of the committee, although I would urge you not to adopt that amendment, but with respect to all the rest of this, looking at it at least from a lawyer's point of view and looking carefully at the language, what this bill does is entirely gut the intent of consumer protection in the bill and leaves basically an unenforceable, we might as well not pass the legislation because we haven't added or done anything for consumers from my perspective. Now I'd like to have, unless there are questions you want to take now, the Attorney General's office can address the remedies section.
And members, if I may, I mean, I would suggest that the remedies portion of the bill is probably most appropriately discussed in Judiciary. As Senator Sparks said, it might be. I think it is. It doesn't mean we have never done it here. We could, and Senator Olson and I both serve on that committee. I mean, we can convey your concerns on that. In that committee, but I think that probably should happen there. But Deputy General Olson, I ask you to weigh in on that if you would like to.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Senators. I just want to first indicate that I believe there's been some misinformation about what the current remedy section of the bill introduced by Senator Olson actually provides. The remedies provision provides the same remedies that any other consumer protection bill in the state of Minnesota provides, essentially those remedies under 8.31. However, contrary to what has been discussed, the individual consumer is not the one who would have the right to bring an action and obtain a civil penalty. The civil penalty portion, which is provided by the legislature under 8.31, allows for a civil penalty up to $25,000. That would only be something that the Attorney General bringing an action could seek after they go to court and it would be at the discretion of the court. The individual consumer, this really is just allowing them under 8.31 to bring an action to obtain any damages, which again, they'd have to go to a court, they'd have to prove the damages, and their attorney's fees and costs. There's been much indication that this will be an increase in class action. Currently, right now, individual consumers can certainly be represented in a class action for fraud, misrepresentation, and under Rule 23, which governs class actions, they are allowed attorney's fees and costs there. So anything put in this bill is not increasing the likelihood of class actions. In fact, the class actions, if they want to bring them, could be brought right now. The language that is proposed in the delete all amendment would, I believe, violate the constitutional right of the Attorney General to have prosecutorial discretion. Essentially, this language would indicate that the Attorney General cannot bring a lawsuit until they first contacted the company and allowed them a time period within which to explain what had happened. This is unprecedented. It would certainly not be the way. I don't believe the legislature would want the Attorney General's office to have to act on cases. Quite frankly, in many cases, the Attorney General's office needs to act quickly. They need to have the prosecutorial discretion, and I don't believe that that prosecutorial discretion should be taken away. In addition, I can tell you that, for example, when a company is sued, that it's generally not a surprise to them. The cell phone industry has received numerous letters, hundreds and thousands of letters from our office indicating their consumers' complaints. And so it would not be a surprise to them. They would have known because our office does attempt to first resolve complaints on individual consumers. And so, therefore, this provision would be unprecedented, I believe would be inappropriate and take away the prosecutorial discretion of the Attorney General and should not be considered by the committee.
Yeah, I'd like some advice from the committee, and I certainly will listen to it, but I think that we should probably, this committee should not be tackling that section, and I think Senator Sparks agrees with that. So we're going to delete Mr. Stang here on page 2. I don't mean to belabor things. I'd like to see us leave what we did on page 1 of the the amendments that Senator Olson presented but didn't vote for, as she explained. And then, I don't know, I noticed that the billing language, on page 2, your subdivision 3, Senator Olson, is very similar. I think there's one sentence that's different in that, in the Sparks amendment, for example. I think, it's a little messy.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Sparks.
I want to thank Senator Olson. I think that her A6 amendment did start to work towards some of the things that we have talked about, and I think that this bill does have to go to judiciary, and I think Senator Metzen's probably going to ask to see it in his bill. My hope would be that Senator Olson would continue to meet with the providers. I'm glad that meeting happened last night. I think we need to continue those talks. Make sure we want to obviously focus on consumer protection, but this committee really deals with competition, too. And my biggest point, I think Senator Johnson and some of the other ones talked about it, we don't want to make ourselves an island because this is an industry that's very important to all of us. So I think that that's something we need to look at. But if Senator Olson assures me that she will continue to work on the business-to-business, the prepaid, and the third party, obviously judiciary will probably deal with the remedy section. I would be willing to remove my A5 amendment at this time.
Okay, Senator Sparks, thank you.
Madam Chair and Senator Sparks, I can certainly give you that assurance.
And I wonder if we might not do a little more here, however.
Okay.
On page 2, you and I kind of collaborated on the coverage map. On page 2 of your bill, parens 2, close parens, that again talks about maps. I don't know if we need to... I don't know how that is different than item 1. Item 1 on page 1 says at the time of sale, they get a coverage map showing where service is generally available.
Probably conforming.
Mr. Stang is suggesting that we conform the language of item 2, if that's acceptable to you.
Madam Chair, I would consider that a friendly amendment.
Okay. So then it would relate to where the location where they're selling. This has to be available there and also on the website. Yeah, okay.
Madam Chair, you're referring to line 2.1 of the bill?
Yep. Yes, yep. Yes, okay. Senator Olson.
So, again, I don't recall your language offhand, but it would be make coverage maps that the generally available or generally information that language.
Senator Olson, that language on page 1 says after the word map, showing where service is generally available.
And delete the word accurate? So on line 2.1, we would delete the word accurate, and the line would read, make coverage maps showing where service is generally available to prospective and so forth?
Exactly, Senator Olson.
Then, Madam Scheid, I'd move that language, or Madam Chair. Senator Scheid, Madam Chair. I'll move that language.
This is the work of the committee. This is, it's okay if we stumble it once in a while here. Members, do you understand what we're doing here on page 2? Any further discussion? All those in favor of that amendment, say aye.
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 Opposed? The amendment is adopted. So I do not have language, Senator Olson, concerning how the disclosure is made. I certainly believe in the disclosure. I'm not real comfortable with telling people the font size and that sort of thing, but we can, you know, it's something I'd like to keep discussing with you. Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, I know that we have language in other kinds of consumer protection contracts, and I would be happy to work with the industry to the extent that we can. I think the two key concepts are that the language related to the extension of contracts and the penalties for, you know, for getting that when you don't have a 24 contract, and also for these individual fees that are going to be charged, has to be prominent, prominent in some way, whether it's bold language, whether it's 12-point font, whatever it may be, and that there has to be an indication somehow on the contract that the person specifically saw that language and agreed to it. And we do that a lot by initialing, or, you know, we have different ways we address that. I'm happy to continue to work with you so that if this language seems unworkable for a reason that the industry can specifically bring to us, but they can suggest something that still has those same indications of prominence in a way to document this, then I'm very open to whatever those suggestions might be.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Are you, I'd like to know, Senator Olson, if on page 2, subdivision 4 is negotiable. Have you? That's the third-party billing. Are you?
Madam Chair, I'm not sure if all the members on this committee really are aware of what that third-party billing refers to.
Would you describe that?
Could I allow the Attorney the General's Office to describe what we're referring to there? Because I do have language that would eliminate that third-party billing subdivision, but I guess I feel that people should know when something is going to be put on their bill and should agree to that those additional charges going on their bill, so that if something gets put on their bill by a third party that they didn't agree to and that there's no evidence they ever agreed to it, that they don't have any recourse. And so, you know, that really concerns me. If there's any specific concerns about the language, again, I'm willing to work with the industry. But if it's the will of the committee that people don't have that, you know, aren't given that kind of notice or don't have to agree, then I do have language to take that out. But I'll give the Attorney General's office the chance to explain the kinds of things we're talking about.
Deputy Attorney General Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Senators. What this is really trying to get at is additional charges from a third party, another company, that appear on a consumer's wireless cell phone bill. This could be, for example, a ringtone or some other service that they may have, you know, clicked on a computer screen, said okay to, and not realize that they were actually purchasing the ringtone, that they would be billed monthly for that. The requirements in this bill are really pretty basic. They're just stating that if a third party includes a charge on a consumer's wireless bill, that they should have obtained first express authorization from the consumer, that they should have asked the consumer, do you want this? And the consumer has agreed. So there was a meeting of the minds that they wanted to pay for that service. And that if they didn't, that they can't bill that to the consumer. So essentially what it is providing is the consumer the right, if there wasn't a meeting of the minds, if the third party didn't have any express authorization to include that charge. So the consumer has a right to dispute that charge and not pay it. As I mentioned, this is language almost verbatim to language that is currently part of law as respects landline telephones. And it is trying to get at the problem of consumers being billed for third-party services or third-party items that they were not aware they contracted for.
Is this, you know, I don't, how would this work then? Is this the kind of thing where if you want to vote on your cell phone on Dancing with the Stars, not that I would ever have done that on my cell phone, is that the kind of charge you're talking about?
It'd be all types of third. Sorry, Madam Chair, Senators.
Senators.
Madam Brenzel. Chair, I can give you an example. I was on the internet. I got an email that said, if you click on this line, you can get access to certain screensavers or bell tones on your phone. And I clicked on the line to check things out, and I thought, yeah, that would be interesting, never realizing there was any charge connected with it. And shortly after that, I get a ring on my cell phone telling me that I have purchased this bell tone or whatever. And I hadn't agreed to anything. And there was a bill on my cell phone. It wasn't a lot. I discontinued it. I didn't do anything with it. But it was just a very, very annoying.
Senator Prettner-Solem, but you received a notice. I'm wondering how the consumer will verify this. That's my question, because could you, at the time you got the ring, you didn't know you could have had Senator Marty program your phone like I did. But were you able to opt out at that point, or just Senator Prettner-Solem?
I received a message that I had to respond in some way, which I just deleted the whole thing. But I still had a bill, and it was cents. It was only pennies. It was, you know, it was a small amount. But I realized, and I'm savvier than a lot of people, but
well.
I didn't. Yes, I am.
We'll vote on that.
It's dangerous to make those kinds of assertions in this business. So,
I can understand how somebody could be caught with a bill that they hadn't agreed to.
I'd like to know, Senator Olson, if you have an idea or how this would work in the real world. How would they get that? How would the wireless carrier confirm this? Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, if you look at the language of the bill on line 2.33, it says, unless the third party or wireless carrier has obtained the customer's prior express authorization. It doesn't say so if the person challenges this, someone, whether it's the wireless carrier or the person, the third party that put this on, is going to have some evidence that there was authorization for that charge. It isn't requiring, unless someone complains, that the wireless carrier have records of all of this, but they would have to have the responsibility to go back to the third party, and the third party would have to be able to produce some kind of a documentation to show that the person agreed to this if that person complains.
Senator Scogin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as I sit here listening, I sense Senator Olson's desire for consumer protection. But I sense we're putting the bill together on the fly. And I hear amendments that are going to be kind of accepted by the industry, but voted against by the author. And so I'm wondering if it doesn't need some work before we decide whether or not it's a good public policy.
Well, Senator Scogin, I mean, I think we're doing the work.
We've done a lot of work.
Not pretty, maybe, but, you know, it's like sausage, remember. You shouldn't watch it being made, but here we are participating in that. Senator Olson.
And Madam Chair, I was going to say, you know, Senator Scogin, I invite you to sit into one of our Judiciary Committee meetings sometime and see what we do with bills that come there. But in seriousness, in response to the issue that you raised, we've made an effort to work with the industry. And I wouldn't have had to put together these amendments to address their concerns, but I'm doing that after having conversations with some of the people on the committee here and having certain things pointed out, as opposed to something that would just basically gut my bill. and giving this committee an opportunity to make these choices and decisions. I guess that's the point. It's not as though the bill really needs more work. These are very specific things, but it gives this committee the opportunity for some options. That's what I was trying to do, because I don't really know what the will of this committee is until we come here and have the opportunity to vote.
Senator Gerlach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that what Senator Scogin had to say is wise. I have a number of other questions here. I'm looking at the time here. There's other committees. We had the amendment from Senator Sparks. He still has a number of concerns. And we generally don't like to. I mean, as customary, we don't like to send bills out that are not, that we haven't signed off on all of the parts. I understand the remedy section and judiciary handling that, but there's a lot of the other commerce sections that we are remaining unresolved. So I don't want us to rush and pass the bill and hope it gets taken care of in other committees. I think it's wise for us to handle that, and that I think Senator Sparks should get together with Senator Olson and those folks and make sure everything is taken care of and then bring it back to our committee. So, Madam Chair, I would move that we table this bill.
Is that debatable? That's not debatable.
Madam Chair, Senator Johnson. I'm not a debate. Just a reminder, we've done this in this committee several times.
No, I understand, and Senator Gerlach makes a point. I will tell you it will be my intention that this bill will be considered before anything else, then when we're done. I mean, that's not a threat. That's just a promise to Senator Olson.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Olson.
This bill has to travel through at least a couple of other committees, and it would be very much my concern that if the bill is tabled at this point, that'll be the end of the opportunity to get this bill on the floor this session.
Just a moment.
How much time do we have left? A couple of weeks? 2 weeks on this committee.
I think that the chair will lay the bill over if that's okay. Senator Gerlach.
That'd be all
right. I'll withdraw my motion to table.
I think what we will do is lay it over, and I want to tell Senator Olson that we will do this bill probably Tuesday evening if that's acceptable.
Madam Chair, I know I think we have judiciary on Tuesday evening too, but unless I'm having to chair for Senate, then I'll be happy to leave that committee.
Yeah. I think you have data practices that afternoon. I don't think we're having it because Senator Moore will be gone.
Oh, okay.
So, members, and Senator Olson, if I might, I still would like to work with something with you on something on third party. I think I do want to leave the remedies for judiciary.
Are we here in Betzel?
No. But members, please contact Senator Olson if you have some ideas for her, and people in the industry as well. Feel free to do that, and we'll hear the bill on Tuesday night.
Thank you,
members. Thank you for your hard work. The meeting's adjourned.